Scotch.
All this time I've thought so highly of him.
Not anymore.
Good morning, y'all. I'm Julie, and I'm an alcoholic. I have not a clue what I'm doing here. I was told, that y'all would be lobbing softball questions at me. And, okay. What we got?
Are we done?
I'm easy.
Okay, let's see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, there's a question already.
Hi, Sissy. Ooh, that's a really broad question, isn't it? Okay, so the question is, when did I start sponsoring? How did I know that it was time to start sponsoring others? And honestly, y'all, if y'all were here on Thursday night, you heard about my sponsor. She told me when it was time to start sponsoring others. Honestly, I don't even remember who my first sponsee was. I can tell you this, though. You know, our book talks about... I don't know where, I don't know what page, but I remember it saying something about the first 12 prospects it didn't take. And I know that happened for me. There were several that it just didn't take. And I remember going to my sponsor and asking her about it. What am I doing wrong? She said, you're not doing it wrong. You know, we're alcoholics. And if you stayed sober, then that's what really matters. You know, and I did. I stayed sober. They may have gone back out, but I stayed sober. I just do what my sponsor tells me to do when she tells me to do it. And now it's up to you, Earl. Can we get a really good question for Earl, y'all, okay? Come on.
Like calculus or something, okay?
Thanks for, like, drawing that out so much. So. My name's Earl. I'm an alcoholic. Honored to do this with you, Julie. It's very nice to meet you. Lovely woman. Look at that smile. I mean, that's what it's about, right? That. Thank you for your question. I would get the ball rolling here. That was great. Working with others, you know, out of the big book, always. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I remember the first guy that I sponsored. I do remember because I was so shocked. That I was 2.5 years sober. I was out of my mind. I was at a very large meeting. It was the Thursday night beginners workshop in Brentwood, California. And it was about 250 people every Thursday. And the only reason I went and sat in the back, you know, my arms folded, mad dog and everybody, you know, to stay away from me, was because I knew that there was this first few rows of people that had a lot of time. And it was almost like you could walk up the aisle and you could kind of feel when it started to get really sober, you know what I mean? Like very crazy from the back, and it would just kind of calm down as you got to the front of the room, you know? And there were guys like Fred Eve. He's passed. Fred Ellis. Fred Ellis was just this... You know, I mean, I could do a 20-minute story right now on Fred Ellis that would blow your mind. I mean, he was just an absolutely remarkable human being in every way. And he would, at the end of that meeting, he would stand up near the podium. He would, if this was the podium, he would stand right over there. And a group of guys would gather around him and ask him questions. And Fred would just calmly, politely give them his time and his experience and I would stand off to the side and burglarize the conversation, you know? I was hanging back and listening and got it out. So I never really had to make any real human contact, but I could try to pick up a little information on what was going on. And after several weeks of this, me thinking that I'm a crafty fella, all of a sudden, Fred's talking to this guy. And he just turns to me and he goes, hey, Earl, how are you? And I went, I couldn't even say fine, which was my newcomer mantra. You know, how you doing? Fine. What's going on? Fine. How was your day? Fine. All right, just don't talk to me. I don't have answers to questions, right? And he knew my name, and I don't know how he knew my name. And I was always just astonished by him. And I remember being in that room with 2.5 years sober. Now I'd gotten to the point where I could stand in the group of guys and listen to them ask him questions. And listen to his answers. I still couldn't ask him any questions, but I could listen, you know, and act like, you know, I could wave at people and stuff. Now, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I was slowly. And this guy to me, and he says, "Hey, my name's Steve. I'm an alcoholic." I'm like, "Yeah, all right. Yeah. Kind of figured that. I mean, you're in here, aren't you?" And he said, "I got 6 days. My aunt knows you." And I look over and there was this woman that I'd said hello to like twice. And he said, "Will you sponsor me?" And I just looked at him like, what is wrong with you? There's over 200 people in here. And you stepped on all these roses to find this thorn in the back of the room. Ask him to sponsor you. And I sponsored him for 20 years. But how I learned about working with us. I want to say, I think, starting in the beginning, any way that you engage a newcomer that involves the code of love and tolerance toward others and the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is a good way to go about it. And all the rest of it is just all the rest of it, right? So if somebody's doing it differently than you're doing it, they're not necessarily wrong. You know, there's a lot of that, you know what I mean, that, you know, we got the right way and everybody else is in here killing people. And you know, I think if you're coming from a place of love and service, you know, and you're tolerant of, you know, the fact that, you know, somebody that's new, no, they don't know what's going on. No, they don't get it. No, they don't understand. No, they don't see the value and the purpose of these vague, nebulous ideas and concepts and these abstracts that we try to move towards. And they don't understand the concept of chopping the wood and carrying the water of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they don't understand the notion of service. They've been in a selfish, self-centered state. What, you know, if they go and say, "Do you understand what it means to get out of yourself and be a service?" And go, yeah. So what you mean is that you know what those words mean when I string them together, right? You go, yep. Do you understand the practical application of that? No, now I don't know what you're talking about. No. That's the whole point is that I think that for me, the way that I do it is I think that is to approach working with others from immediately engaging our code, which is love and tolerance toward others, that I should be loving and tolerant, that I should show some compassion, some patience, that I should exhibit some of the things that I would hope for the other, right? And I should let it be what it is. I don't want to rob somebody else of their experience and their path by nailing the thing down so tight that they don't get a chance to breathe and have their own experience of, you know, coming to this understanding. You know, I'm working with people in the book because for me this isn't about staying stopped, about stopping drinking. It's about staying stopped. How do I stay stopped? And the only way I'm going to do that is if I can get comfortable sober. Right? The reason that I've found comfort is because of I've been relieved of the obsession of the mind, the greater aspect of my illness, right? And that's the goal of when somebody says to me, "Will you sponsor me?" Basically what I hear is, I wish to know peace as a sober individual. Can you help me move toward that? Can you show me the path towards peace sober? He's like, yeah, I can. And there, and good news for both of us, there is no Israel season involved in what we will be talking about. You know, these are not any special ideas that I've cooked up personally. We've learned to avoid those things based on years of information. I experienced like, this is what happens when you do it Earl's way, right? It's not good. It's really, really bad. So it's about really creating an opportunity for somebody to find their way, you know, to being free to the obsession of the mind, that beast whispering in your ear, right? To have that voice go away. And how do you do that? How do you get rid of that voice? How do you get rid of that thing that's been there so long you think it's you? Right? Your ability to separate the individual from the illness is impossible. They've become melded together. And how do you slowly separate the two and address the one? By beginning, working in this, the book is such a great book because of the information therein. As Julie has beautifully and dramatically outlined, please hold up said book, Julie. Yes. In her book, right? I see that and I think, cool. I like that, right? Somebody digging in. What is this about? What's going on here? What does this mean? What do you think of this? What do you think of that? And if you ask alcoholics, I can take five alcoholics in this room and turn to one page in that book and ask them what they think about it, and I'm going to get five different answers. Every single time. But if they've actually worked the steps and been relieved of the obsession as a direct result of doing that, they may all have five very different answers. But if you really listen to it, at the heart of every one of them will be the same thing. Right? I surrendered myself to a process that, in fact, was a plan of action that relieved me of the obsession to drink, to use. It's the same thing. And I like to keep it as simple as I possibly can. I remember sponsored this guy, Dave, right? Dave wasn't really interested in the idea of getting sober. And his law firm called me and said, if Dave wants to continue to practice law, Dave's going to get sober. And so we went in and we had a little talk with Dave. And Dave very begrudgingly said, you know, all right, I'll get sober. You know, and immediately when everybody left, he sat down with me and he said, listen, let's talk about this. And he just started immediately negotiating. Right? I said, listen, I'll tell you what, let's just meet at a meeting tonight, you know, and I want you to read the doctor's opinion and the first 8 pages of Bill's story. Not a lot. Not a lot of reading. Right? Could take a minute. And I just want you to do, just real simple, just look at it and say, is this true? Read a sentence and ask yourself, is that true for me? Do I identify with that? And if you do, cool, move on. If it really kind of jumps at you, like, yeah, right? Underline it. If it really pops for you, you might put a little asterisk there, you know what I mean? Or get a highlighter. A lot of people big on highlighters, right? Get you a highlighter. Highlight it. Right? Or if you, you know, strenuously object to the statement that's been made, write no. And we'll meet at the meeting and we'll go over it. Right? This is probably a good way to do this, right? Anecdotally. Right? So, I looked up that word earlier in my room. So Dave shows up at the meeting. And I go, did you do the reading? And he says, yes, I did. I said, fantastic, let's go over it. He hands me his book. I look at it. There's literally no writing at all in the doctor's opinion or the first 8 pages of Bill's story except for 43 no's. And And I was trying very hard not to do just that, just crack up as I'm turning the pages going, oh, look, what a shock. No. Look how surprising. There's a no on this page. Right? I mean, it was just classic. And he's like sitting like this, like, huh, wait, yeah. Right? I see you dance around those, buddy boy. Right? So I said, well, let's just, here, just pick one of them. Just pick one no. So I picked a no, and I said, okay, so this sentence says this, and you've written no. Why? Upon what does this no stand? And he goes, well, and he gives me this drawn out, it's always drawn out. It's always, you know, vague, you know. And I told him, and I just said, listen, when you were talking, were you listening to what you were saying like I was? Did you hear what you just said? And he goes, well, of course I heard what I just said. And I said, and you're going to stand with that. You're really going to stand with that. You're going to stick with that before I start to address what you just said. I'm just giving you one more shot here. You're sticking with that no. And he said, and I quote, well, possibly we could put maybe. I said, okay, maybe. Right? Let's go to another one. And he looks at me and goes, are we doing this with all 43 of them? I said, yep. Yep. It's my job to see that there's absolutely nothing between you and what we're going for here. And every single no is a bit of a roadblock. Right? Now I was careful to avoid the word surrender with this particular individual. Because I knew if I said surrender, he was just going to shut down. So I didn't say it. I didn't need to beat him over the head. You know, it's like, you're going to have to get used to, brand new, you know. His eyes are still a little crossed. You know, he's still, you know, seeing things in the peripheral vision that aren't necessarily there. You know, and I'm going to start laying, I was like, well, you're going to come to have a close relationship with a power greater than yourself. We choose to call God. And you're going to this, and you're going to that, and you're going to, and you know, and you're going to be a service, and you're going to turn your will and your life over, and you're going to, you know what I mean? And just watch the guy's head explode. I mean, we're not going to get anywhere. So just easing this guy into the game, right? One no at a time, right? And when we had addressed all 43 no's in that part of the book, what had happened was that we had really talked a lot about the doctor's opinion, right? That we had to look at this from both the perspective of the mind and the body, right? That, and the first 8 pages of Bill's story and how we did in fact identify with the downward spiral of alcoholism that had taken place in Bill's life, that we identified with that. So there was a glimmer in that beginning that this thing was written for people somewhat like us, me and my friend Dave. And it was a great beginning just to really cement the foundation, what this relationship was going to be about. That we were going to really engage what was his resistance to ongoing recovery. Because that's what each of those no's represented to me. That this is a roadblock to ongoing recovery. This is a roadblock to him staying stopped. Every one of these no's is him putting something up on the shelf that under certain circumstances, I pull that no down and I can have a drink. So we're just going to address each and every one of them as we go. And we did. Dave's like, oh God, I don't know how long. Dave's sober a long time now. And it's very funny listening to him, you know, he'll be on the phone, we'll be hanging out. When I go to LA now, I stay at his house. And he'll be on the phone and I'll hear from the other room and go, listen, all I asked was that you read the doctor's opinion in the first 8 pages of Bill's story. And I'm just like going, nice. That's nice. He remembers, right? Because we really took the time and it was, and out of it came so much, you know, his surrender occurred. Dave was able to accept his surrender post-surrender. You know what I mean? It was in looking back and recognizing that he had surrendered, that he was comfortable with the idea that he had surrendered. Facing surrender, it was Dave's tendency to immediately go, not today. Right? Looking back and realizing that he already had, he's like, oh, so that's how it is. And you can, so suddenly surrender to win makes sense. Because Dave realizes he's surrendered and he's feeling better all at the same time. Right? So this whole working with others thing, I think, is it's absolutely vital to my, I won't sponsor anybody that works through the 12 steps and then doesn't go out and sponsor. You know, when is it time to sponsor them? You know, the minute you've completed the steps, work the 12 steps, go to a meeting and start looking. I tell all my guys, I go, there's a guy in every meeting that you go to that nobody wants to talk to. Right? That doesn't smell great. You know, he's got absolutely nothing you want. Perfect guy. Go get that guy. Right. That was me. Julie's identifying with the statement. Right. Right. It's go get that guy. Go to him. Hi. How you doing? I mean, that's how I was approached. A guy came to me. There's a woman in here today that was at the original home group. Where are you? There she is. Right. The Try God group, Culver City, California. She, when I talk about Vegas Inn, the first guy that ever walked up to me, she knew Vegas. Interesting fellow, right? Yeah, he came up to me, handout, because I wasn't going to go talk to you guys. I wasn't going to stand up in a meeting and go, excuse me, Earl, over here. Little nutty. Not really sure what to do. Probably could use a lot of help. Anybody here's, you know, down for that, you know, could meet me in the back of the room at the end of the meeting. Completely incapable of that. So I needed a Vegas come running up on me and say hello. And me act like I didn't like that this was what was happening. I got to act like this was nuts. That there was no value in a conversation between Vegas and I. That your little book, you know, was your little... You needed to allow me my disdain. You needed to allow me that. Give me room to act poorly. Because I didn't know how to act any other way. You know, I don't know, I'm going to work with a newcomer and say to him, you know, well, you know, I don't appreciate your attitude, young man. Really? It's, the gift is mine that I get to sit here and get out of self and be of service to another human being. I'm the lucky one, right? I'm the one working my program. I'm the one doing what's being suggested to me by my sponsor. I'm a part of a human chain, right? So my job is to simply try to bring this individual into what I'm being shown to. I mean, in the beginning, I was a step or two ahead of a few guys as I was working through the steps, and they were looking at me going, hey, what's up with this four step? And I'm like, just give me a minute. You know, and that was a perfect way to go through it. I remember the first step study that we ever did. It was eight of us. Me and my friend Christopher, my original friend in sobriety. We did a thing with the Big Book Comes Alive with Joe and Charlie, right? We did that together. And we decided this is a great way to take people through the steps. Let's just follow this format. Instead of trying to figure this out, let's just go with these guys. These guys are winners, man. Right? So we did. We got these six other people, and we just took them through, you know, the Big Book, you know, put on the tapes, and we listened and did the whole thing. And that was almost 33 years ago. And all eight of us are still sober. So rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And that, I mean, that crew, you know, thoroughly followed the path. I mean, my whole thing about that particular sentence is, I need to find out what thoroughly means. That's what I need to find out. What do they mean by thoroughly? What is involved in thoroughly? And when some guy walks up to me and says, will you sponsor me? I think that it's important that I'm armed with thoroughly. That I can say, well, you know, odds are if you're gonna make it, you're gonna have to thoroughly follow the path. And let me show you how we do that. You just start with, read the doctor's opinion in the first 8 pages of Bill's story. Ask yourself, read a sentence, ask yourself, is this true for me? Do I identify with this? Make a notation to answering that, and then go to the next sentence. And we're not in a hurry. You know, you don't get a coffee pot like that. This thing down here I keep bumping into. You don't get a beautiful coffee pot like that when you complete the steps. There's no prize at the end. There's no diploma. We have no graduation ceremony. Right? What you get is sober alcoholic. What you get is free. What you get is relieved of the obsession of the mind. What you get is to be walking the earth in a state of being that you haven't known since the first time you got loaded. Right? I mean, that's what happened for me. I mean, I started at 12. I finished at 28. You know, I got sober. I was an adult, technically. But I had no idea how to be in the world. I needed to, have to be taught. And the great way to be taught was to say, okay, look, why don't we start with the foundation first? Let's build a foundation upon which you can stand a free man. And that's what working with others is about for me, is saying, look, this is the foundation I was given in this program, and I'm going to pass it on to you. And I'm not going to complicate it. You know, at no point am I going to be bringing out charts. You know, or here's the questionnaire that I use. You know, fill out this questionnaire and get back to me and we'll see if you... Now, in the old days, it's my understanding that what they do with newcomers was they had a meeting before the meeting. And you couldn't just go into the meeting. We need nuts. Let anybody in there. You know what I mean? So they had a meeting before the meeting, and the newcomers would go to the meeting, and you'd go for 4 weeks, 1 hour each, and in 4 hours, they would take you through the 12 steps. And if you would show up and do the work, you know what I mean, and do this 4 weeks in a row, it was an indication that you were serious about getting sober, you know, that you had a desire to stop drinking. And based on that, someone would then take you to the actual meeting, and that's the whole sponsorship idea. That individual would take you and sponsor you into the main group's meeting, right? And not a bad system. I say we bring it back. But I mean that whole notion, that whole idea, or so I've been told, was big, and it makes a lot of sense to me that. When I'm starting out with somebody, I see so many people in Alcoholics Anonymous in meetings that I go to, people that I know that think if they're going to meetings, they're working a program. And I respectfully disagree with that. I think if you're going to meetings, you're engaging in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is vital to my recovery. You know, I'd be lost without you. I can't, what's the first word in the steps? We admit it. I can't do this on my own. I need to be with you consistently, right? So that fellowship, I'm not downplaying that at all. That's the shield, and the sword is the steps. You know what I mean? The big book. So you got the big book and you got the community, the fellowship, and in tandem, you know, I got a shot at being in the world. So I gotta stick with you, but I see so many people in the rooms that have never really worked the steps as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Rich alluded to it last night, and, you know, I agree 100% that, you know, it's, somebody else was talking to me earlier, I think it was Rich as well, we were talking about the buzz. Like, when did you do that catch the buzz talk? You know, how long were you sober when you did that talk? And I said, I don't know. You know, I've gotten old enough now that asking me chronological questions is pretty much a waste of time. Because, you know, it was either last Thursday or 1978. I don't know. You know, it's getting a little long in the tooth. But what was I talking about? Catching the buzz. Yeah, it's like, you know, when I was out there drinking and using, right, I didn't want a little bitty baby buzz. I never said to anybody, no, thank you, I've had enough. Because you can say that, it's not true.
Right.
Right? If you can say it, you can have a little more. a little more. You know, no thanks, I'm driving. I mean, all that stuff. Nah, it was always just kill the fear. And fear's the last thing I feel. So I got to get wasted. You know what I mean? So I never wanted a little bitty baby buzz out there. Why the hell would I want one in here? Who walks in here and says, I would like 34% of what you offer? Not a percent more. Who says that? It's like, you got a buzz in here? I will have that, please. What's the buzz? Well, you know, you're going to have to, you know, okay, give me the book. Right? I want the whole buzz. I want the big buzz. I want to know what's possible in here. Right? Because you're telling me that I'm going to reach a point in here where drinking and using isn't even going to occur to me. That the buzz I'm catching in here is so great that I'd be downgrading my life experience getting high. Oh, you have my attention. And from there, I have to keep it simple for me, not just for them, for me. I got to keep it simple and not get caught up in all the minutiae. And look, I'm really happy that there are people in the program that really get into the minutiae. Do you know what I mean? Please turn to page 78 in your book, paragraph 2, sentence 3, word 4. Awesome. You know what? Because there's a lot of people that go, oh, that feels good. I like that. Right? Just, you know, right in there. Just give me that little thin lane. Because that's where I'm comfortable, right? Great. So I'm glad guys do it that way. Me, I'm more about, this is about an experience. And I want to be able to create enough room, right? But enough structure, the book, the outline, the order in which the information is delivered in the book, to just stick with that. And that's enough structure for me to create an area within which an experience can occur, right? That experience being, right, finding a relationship with a power greater than myself, right, being restored to sanity, soundness of mind, being relieved of the obsession to drink and use, to have that lifted as a direct result, the obsession of the mind lifted as a direct result of doing that. For me, I need space to work it out, right, to flush it out, to wrestle with it. Right? It's about the feelings. I'm a feelings guy. I'm not a facts guy. I never have been. You know what I mean? If it feels bad, it is bad. You know, I have to constantly back out of that thinking all the time. The whole of that, you know, pause when agitated, I should have that tattooed somewhere on my body. All right, where I can read it. Like, right, oh, pause when agitated. All right, right, oh, wait for the second thought right over here, right? That's the kind of ink you'll find. If I ever get inked up, that's what you'll find on me, right? Pause when agitated, wait for the second thought. Right? Still, 38 years sober, still necessary. Still words to live by. Still vital to my daily experience. Right? So keeping it simple, it's the same simple stuff. The stuff that works at 38 days works at 38 years. Right? It doesn't change. It's that same basic set of tools, that toolbox, that spiritual toolkit that they talk about. It's the same stuff. You learn it in a day, right? And you work on it and you work on it and you work on it and it goes deeper and it goes deeper and it goes deeper, you know, I remember I was at Ohio Street, and then I'm going to get you back up here. I was reading it. I was sitting at Ohio Street. I was going to 4 to 5 meetings a week at Ohio Street every week. And right behind the podium, like right there, was a like 4x3 foot painting of the Serenity Prayer. I've been going to meetings there 5 days a week for a couple of years, and I spotted it. because I had excellent focus at that point. And I read that prayer, and I went up to my sponsor. I called my sponsor, the late, great Donald Madden, and I said, "Donald, I found this prayer. It's fantastic. Someone I'm going for." And he goes, "Oh, what is it?" And I said, "Well, it said, rarely have we seen it." He goes, "Oh, God, no." And I went, what do you mean, no? It's featured very prominently at the hall that I attend. I would think that you would be in support of it." And he goes, "No, there's way too much going on in there. You're going to screw that all up completely. You want to pray? I'll give you prayers." And I said, "All right. What?" And he said, "All right. When you wake up in the morning, before your feet hit the floor, I want you to take your crazy little head and look up, and I want you to put your hands up, and I want you to say, whatever." And begin your day. Now, I'm looking for a pen while he's telling me this. Whatever. Right? And he goes, "And when the day ends, you get back into bed, pull the covers up, and when you look crazy head a little, look up, right, put your hands up, and I want you to say, enough." Close your eyes. Not enough. So let me see if I got this right. You start with whatever, you end with enough. He goes, "Yes, Earl." He goes, you can now see why I didn't want you involved with that other prayer. Click. And that, like 4 days later, I called him up at like 10 o'clock in the morning and went, "We're screwed here." I go, "What are you talking?" He goes, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I'm done, man. I'm like paralyzed. I can't take any more of today. I can't do this. It's too hard. There's too much of everything, man. It's too loud. It's too busy. There's too many people. There's too many words. There's too many things. There's just too much happening in here. There's too much. I'm not happy." He goes, "All right, I got you." He goes, "Good, because it's the only call I'm making." He goes, "All right, calm down. I want to take a deep breath." That was a deep breath for me. That was a very deep breath. I was a little tense. He goes, "All right, now I want you to say enough." I said, "You can do that? It's 10 a.m. He goes, "Just say it." I said, "Enough." And he goes, "Now take another deep breath. Now say whatever." And I said, "This is getting crazy." "Whatever." He goes, "Wonderful." Click. And I loved him for that. Because it was like, I don't know when things are supposed to stop. I always knew with Donald when they were supposed to stop, because suddenly he would no longer be there. I guess we wrap that up. Okay. And what I found was, you know, he was saying, and he said to me at one point, he goes, "What I was trying to tell you was I didn't want you to get, you know, time is an abstract concept that we all try to follow. I said, don't get caught. Don't start thinking about that, Earl. I don't want you just flying down that rabbit hole. You know, don't get into the whole time continuum. Just understand that you can begin and end your day whenever you need to. You can stop, take a deep breath, and begin again." Right? And that to me was sponsorship. That was working with others. That was giving me information that was valuable in that moment in the simplest form possible. So whatever and enough became like this mantra of mine that I used. And I used to talk about it all the time from the podium, and I would go to speak at places and guys would show up with t-shirts on that said whatever on the front and enough on the back, you know. And it was like, it caught on because it made sense. Right? That whatever just meant, take it. It meant 1,000 other words. It symbolized a state of mind, a willingness to surrender, to let go, to not be in charge, right? To not dictate the terms of the day. Whatever, just whatever. You know, wherever you are, whatever, right? And enough was my way of saying, okay, I'm going to close this chapter, you know, of the journey, and I'm going to get some rest, and we'll begin again tomorrow with whatever, right? And try to get some sleep, recharge the batteries. You know, so there was so much in so little, and that's where I always find the genius of this thing is in that little bit, you know, and the big book is just chock full of those little bits. Those, the opportunity for the little victory, if you'll grab a hold of it, right? So that's, so for me, working with others is key. I gotta keep, you do what you want. I'm gonna keep the guidelines loose. I'm gonna keep it, for me, it's about, I need to approach it with the, you know, by demonstrating to the best of my ability what's possible if you do this. What happened to me can happen to you. And that I can actually demonstrate to some degree the code of love and tolerance toward others. That I can be a kind person. That I can be a compassionate man. That I can sit patiently and listen to you and what's going on with you and not make it about me. Something that I was completely incapable of prior to coming here. Right? And that I can direct you towards a source of information that you will come to find as fundamental and primary to your journey, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can introduce you to what is afoot in that book. And as you and I, newcomer, move through this process, I'm certain you will teach me a thing or two. You will ask me a question I hadn't thought of. You will offer a suggestion about something that hadn't occurred to me. And that's what this is about, right? I mean, I remain a student of Alcoholics Anonymous. Humility is just the willingness to learn. That's the best definition of humility I know, the willingness to learn, to remain a student. So I sit in meetings and somebody will say, I got 38 years sober, right? Coming up on 39 here pretty quick. That's my way of taking credit for those months between 38 and 39, you know, coming up on 39, right? Right? You wouldn't want anybody to think I'm just 38. For Christ's sake. That's another thing you get around here, is you get enough of a sense of humor where you can laugh at yourself. Right? Where you can do things and all of a sudden stop and go, I'm an idiot. And get a kick out of your own life. But I've made my point, haven't I? I mean, I don't need to say it yet another way, do I? Now, I have a question for Julie. Who, can I tell him about our interaction?
Absolutely.
Okay. See how I asked first? All right. People are out there going, interaction? Right, your husband. Where is your husband? Right. Relax, dude. I ain't got what it takes to step up to her. Yeah. But she emailed me, and it was hysterical. I was laughing out loud in my office. She goes, well, my name is Julie, and I'm going to be at the Atlanta blah, 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 and apparently you and I are doing a panel together, and I've never done that before, so I thought, oh, great, I'm on a panel with Earl H. Like, that meant something, right? But, right? And she's like, basically said, I'm quietly going insane, please reach out, right? So I did, and I was like, you know, relax. Right? We'll just get up there and we'll do our thing together and we'll have fun. Right? And she was all nervous about this. And the thing that I find, and then we get here, and who shows up with a cup of coffee and a couple of cookies? And she, and who shows up with evidence of having actually gotten into that? Big book. Her. Right? So, if you're new, don't be looking around the room for who's got the most time and figuring that's where you're going to get the most information. That is not necessarily true. You're liable to walk up to me and say, you know, Earl, what's your concept of God? And I'll say to you, it's Saturday, isn't it? Where Julie might have something very interesting to say about that experience. The people that I find that I listen to, I like listening to the new ones, the newer ones, people under 10 years. Those are the ones I think are the new ones, right? The ones in their first 10 years that are still wrestling with this. You know what I mean? Are still, you know, forming how they're going to express what it is they found here to another. And are still being surprised. I will admit that I am still being surprised by Alcoholics Anonymous because I pay attention when somebody with 67 days gets up and because they have something they want to share. I'm like, ah, I want to hear that. I want to hear that guy with 67 days. One of the best shares I ever heard in my life was at Ohio Street one night, and the first speaker was a 10-minute speaker, and the guy got up, he walked up and he said, hey, my name is Billy, I'm an alcoholic, I got 16 days, and what it was like is pretty much what it's like right now. Thank you. And sat down, and the room exploded into applause, right? Guy got a standing O. He's like looking at us like, what? And we're looking at him like, dude, you are so where you need to be. That was awesome. All right? The lesson for all of us, you know, own where you are, man. Own where you are. It was terrific, right? 16 days, right? And he just set the whole room straight. It was awesome, right? So my question to you, Julie, is when working with others, When a young woman walks up to you and says, I'm struggling with my sobriety, can you please help me? And that initial excitement hits you, that you're going to begin. How do you start the process with her? When you sit down with that young woman and the book, how do you begin the conversation? Just begin the conversation with her.
I'm thinking Megan would be a better way to answer that. Yeah, and honey bunny. I ask about their willingness. You know, and I ask if they're willing to do whatever it takes. I'm actually a really simple girl, y'all. And I've burned up a lot of brain cells. I love this book, though. And what Earl doesn't understand is, like, at night I have a teddy bear, and during the day this is my safety blanket, okay? And if I have to, I can hit somebody with it. Yeah. And I try my very best to just do what was done for me. You know, and I was remembering, I was thinking back to when I first came in, and I shared with y'all a little bit Thursday night, you know, about the death of my brother, and that was so very traumatic for me. But I remember, you know, I shared with y'all also that I do what I'm told to do. And I remember going to a party. I couldn't tell you what kind of party it was. It may have been a baby shower. I don't know what it was. But I remember being overwhelmed in the middle of that party and just having to go outside and sit down on the steps. And I don't look like this when I came in, y'all. Did not look like this. Combat boots, black lipstick, black hair. And, you know, and I was really thinking about getting an FU tattooed on my forehead just to keep y'all away. But I was overwhelmed with emotion, so I went outside and I sat down on the steps. And this was, you know, dirt, dirty steps. And I just sat down there for a minute to attempt to breathe. And this lady walked out and she sat down beside me. Y'all gotta understand, this lady was at least 6 foot tall and she was regal. She was one of the most beautiful women that I had ever seen. She was dressed so well. Her makeup was beautiful. She smelled so good. And she sat down there next to me and she put her arm around my shoulders and she shared with me about losing her sister. And that was enough for me to get up and to go back into that room and continue on with that party that I had been invited to. And it's funny because I noticed the other day on Facebook, she has less than 30 days more than I do in these rooms. But when I looked at her that day, whoa, I was so impressed with her sobriety. I was so impressed. You know, she obviously had a wealth of knowledge. She'd been in the rooms a really long time. It didn't occur to me she'd only been in for less than 30 days. But she was willing to share with me what she had. And I was thinking to you, you know, my husband and I have been so very blessed and fortunate in these rooms. People ask me to come to different states every now and then. I don't know why. I want to puke every time I get there. But we went to Indiana last year, and when they called and asked, I couldn't say no. I was born in Indiana. I've never been back. Couldn't say no. But it actually ended up being 1 week to the day after I had to have surgery done. I already committed, and let's go back to step number one, some honesty, right? I tried to call and cancel. She didn't answer her phone. She actually texted me back something like, I'm in a funeral, can't talk right now. And she never called me back. So what did I do? I was so sick. I was so nervous. I was so nauseous. Two ladies actually came up to me afterwards and they said, I just want you to know we were ready to catch you if you fell. They meant it. I was that sick. And I told my husband, I was like, oh my God, I absolutely bombed this. He's like, you know, that's probably a good thing. They'll never ask you back. Like, you're right. That's a good thing, right? But, you know, I felt really bad about it because what do? We do service work. We do what we're asked to do. We go, we share our experience, strength, and hope. And I felt like I hadn't managed to get that across. But it was what it was. And I went first, so I got to enjoy the rest of the weekend, right? But I think it was the next day when we were headed down. We were headed down for lunch. And it's me. I got to pee. So before, you know, use the bathroom before we leave the room. We get to the lobby. I head to the bathroom again. And I go into the bathroom, but I hear the door open and somebody come in. It's kind of weird. Maybe a creeper because they never went into a stall, right? But when I came out of the stall and I washed my hands, a girl came up to me and she said, were you the speaker last night? And I said, yeah. And she said, I just need to talk to you. She said, I heard your story. I called my sponsor and told her about it. And my sponsor told me that I had to find you so that we could sit down and talk. She started it, not me. So I just took a minute to sit down with her and share my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I don't know if she's still sober, but I'm still sober. I'm still sober. And I don't like speaking in public, but I'm willing. I'm willing. I'm here, and it's keeping me sober so far, and so for that I'm really grateful. I'd like to give it back to you now.
That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Don't want to, but I do. Right? I don't know how many of you know me or, you know, anything like that, but for those who don't know me, I don't care for flying. I don't like it. And I don't like it as I pack, and I don't like it as I drive to the airport, and I don't like it when I go through security. I tell people, say, why do you leave so early? And I go, well, I have a couple of extra steps that you don't have. pack your bag, get in the car, drive to the airport, you know, go through security, get on a plane, and fly wherever you're going. Not my process. I pack begrudgingly. I drive to the airport knowing that this is not the right thing to do. I go through security, actually hoping that they will say, "Oh, would you please come with us, sir?" I sit down at the gate and I accept my own death. That's honestly what I do. I sit down and I have quiet meditation. I accept my own death. I accept that I've had a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I've gotten to do more, see more, be involved in more things. I've had an absolutely remarkable life. The things that I have been able to do personally, professionally, the obstacles that I've overcome, the achievements that I've been able to find the right people to teach me how to get the things done that I've wanted to accomplish, and you know the love and the support that I've sought, you know, has been there. You know, it's just been an absolutely remarkable life. So you know, if I die today, cool. And I mean, and I get okay with it, and then I go get on the plane, and then we hit some turbulence, and my brain goes, "Not cool." I go, "Oh, sorry, I took it back there, didn't I? Here you go. What, you know, whatever. You know, enough, whatever. Enough, whatever." Right. The flight here, I mean, they make announcements, and I think, well, why would you tell me that? Why would you say that out loud? Why would you say to me, the first half of the flight, smooth as silk. Get up, meander about, and enjoy yourselves. Second half of the flight, we will be suspending service. We're going to have to strap everybody in because it's going to be quite a ride getting in Atlanta. I'm like, well, then why don't we go someplace else? I believe we could get a consensus on a different city within 5 to 10 minutes on this plane. Right? I don't have to go to Atlanta. I was just planning on it, that's all. I don't like it, but I do it. I get to find out all the time that I'm willing to go to any lengths for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm willing to face my worst fears to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody thinks you speak all the time, you must be comfortable with it. I'm not. I'm not comfortable. This is unnatural to me. This is not comfortable for me. I'm not the guy that's like in meetings all the time raising my hand going, "I have something interesting to say." I'm not that guy. I just have the story that I have and the way that I am, and so I get asked to do this. But I'll guarantee you, I mean, there was a time when I said to my sponsor, this whole Earl H thing has gotten stupid. I would like to shut up, please. And he said, okay. I didn't speak for 6.5 years. About, I don't know, 2-3 years ago now, he called me up and he goes, I thought we were talking about like a year. It's been 6.5. And I said, I didn't realize. And I started speaking again. And did I miss speaking? Nope. Didn't miss it a day. You know why? Because I was going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was working with new guys. I was the assistant chair putter away guy at my home group. Right? Yeah. I was, because you know what? There's a lot of really solid members of Alcoholics Anonymous who don't speak. And just so we put the whole speaker boy, I got to speak tonight. I mean, let's just put it in perspective, okay? I don't know about you guys, but where I come from in my sobriety, if the coffee maker doesn't show up, nobody cares what I have to say or not. Where's my damn coffee? Everybody wants their coffee. Somebody find, get a new guy, quickly. Back on topic. If you haven't worked all 12 steps, as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I strongly suggest that you do precisely that and see what happens. I'm not going to suggest to you what happens because I don't want to limit the experience for you with what I might say. Just believe me when I tell you it's the ultimate experience for an alcoholic of the hopeless variety to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as outlined, because it includes having had a spiritual awakening as the result of working these steps. I practice these principles and I carry the message. I carry the message. It's a declarative statement. It doesn't say, if you feel like it. It says, carry the message. Practice the principles, carry the message. Carry the message. And then go do that and see what happens to your life. Right? Stick with us and work the 12 steps and see what happens. The book suggests you'll be amazed before you're halfway through. I was. When I first picked up that book and I read through it, and there was one of the promises. I got to the promises, and it said, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I paraphrase. And I said, you know what? I'm going to draw a line through that. I'm taking that out. Because that's impossible for me. It makes me angry just reading it. And when I get to it and it doesn't happen, I'm throwing this goddamn book away. So I'm crossing it out, and that's going to be my big book. Still the best deal anybody's ever offered me, without that line. Still the best offer. I'm taking it. It's huge. Nothing comes close without the line. Donald said, oh, it was wonderful listening to you share. We're leaving it in. Click. I go, okay. A few years later, I'm driving up the 405 freeway north, right near Sunset Boulevard, near Mulholland. And there's a church up there, the Bel Air Presbyterian Church. My family were members of that church. It's my father was a deacon in that church, which is a laugh riot because my father was a homicidal maniac. And also a deacon in the church. Jesus. Right? But that was also where my family's funeral was. Right? And I couldn't go in that building. And I don't like it that there's any place I can't go that I'm afraid of. If I'm afraid of it, I have to confront it. It's just the idiocy of how I'm wired. Right? So one day I was driving by and I just went, screw it. I'm sober. And I knew they had a Monday night meeting, and it was a Monday. And I rolled on up, pulled up, and I walked in, and it was a Monday night meeting, and I walked into the Monday night meeting. And the guy leading the meeting gave me the whole, meeting nod buddy thing, you know what I mean? We don't really know each other, but we know each other from meetings, you know, that, like, recognize you, right? So he gives me the nod, I give him the nod, and I go over and I sit down. And there's participation, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I'm sitting there minding my own business, just thinking, I'm just going to be in this meeting, I'm going to leave, mission accomplished, take it off the list, right? He says, Earl, you wanna say something for us? And this woman screams. And I went, what did I do? And she stands right up and she says, are you Earl Hightower? And I said, yes. Yes. And she just walks over and she starts crying and she walks over and she sits down in my lap and puts her arms around me and just starts to sob. And I'm holding her and I'm... there. And she says, and what I loved was the meeting was like, the meeting wasn't this meeting where, you know, the bleeding deacon meeting where everybody goes,
What the hell is going on? We're having a participation meeting here. What is this crap? Get back in your seat, young lady, for God's sake. This is inappropriate.
They didn't do that. They just all kind of went, well, I guess we're going this way now, you know. Just rolled with it, right? And she kind of continued. I said, what's going on? And she said, I was in a plane crash. And some people died. Some people that I love died. And I got hurt real bad. And I got pictures in my head I can't live with, I don't think. And people have been telling me I got to find you. That you're the only one that can answer my question. And I said, well, what's the question? And she said, based on your experience, can I make it? And I said, yes, you can. And we both had a good cry. And then she went and sat down, and I floated out of that building knowing that I was really glad it hadn't crossed out that line like Donald Madden told me, because that girl walked over and made that promise come true for me, that an event that had occurred in my life that I knew would never, ever, ever be of any value to anyone ever. It was just a horrible, horrible thing that I would carry the weight of that with me the rest of my days. And I got to tell you, that girl took a little bit of the weight off me. I still carry the weight. And I'll carry my weight. It's my life. I'll carry the weight of my life. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to do that like a man. Gently and with compassion for others. You know? And for gently and with compassion for self. Yeah? But that girl made that... I don't regret it anymore, because I saw it be of value in the eyes of another human being, because I had had an experience that made it possible for her to believe me. Because I'll believe you. If you tell me I can make it, I'll believe you. And I said, you can make it. And she said, okay. And she stuck with us. That's what can happen in Alcoholics Anonymous if you work the 12, if you work the program, you work the 12 steps as outlined in that big book. That's what can happen when you work with others. But those kind of events don't take place if you don't show up and do the work. It's not miraculous moments. It's not, you know what I mean? It's footwork. It's just showing up every day. It was me saying, I'm going to face my fear today. And it, you know, and I went in that building for self. And I got reminded in that meeting, that's not what this is about. Right? It's about getting out of self. That day it took that girl to drag me out of self. How much time do we got left?
1 minute.
1 minute or two. Decide. Well, they went like this. And I, you want the last, you don't want no part of this. I know you don't. Y'all think I've been standing up here all this time because I'm just a big mouth and I like being up this. I've been defending my friends. I would really prefer not to be up here. I've really enjoyed sharing a stage with you. I think you are a lovely, remarkable example of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you ever see me with a big, giant, pink, big book like that, you can be certain I have a new sobriety date. But I'm sure as hell glad that she's got one. If you're new, come catch the buzz with us, because it's happening in here, I'm telling you. It's happening. We got something for you, so come get it. We love you. Peace. Yeah.